All right, so welcome everybody. We are from Fluffy Fairy Games, and today we want to present you how we managed to build our minimum viable products and to scale them to successful games. So this is Philip, software engineer for Idle Miner Tycoon, our first game, and me, Ollie, CTO and co-founder of Fluffy Fairy Games. So we founded Fluffy Fairy Games like 2 years ago in a small dorm room apartment. We were four people back then. And now, 2 years later, we managed to grow to over 50 people. We are based in Berlin, Germany. And yeah. So we have two games out there. The first one is called Idle Miner Tycoon. Who knows this game? Great. Who has it installed? A little less. Okay, so yeah, we released it 2 years ago. It's an idle and incremental game. So what we do there is you can build up your own idle or mining empire, and with that you can buy upgrades and getting more money and re-spend the money in the game. And the cool thing about it is it also plays itself while it's offline, so you get more money even though you're not playing it. And for our second game, Idle Factory Tycoon, we just released it in soft launch, and we'll release it end of April this year. So both games are available on mobile platforms, iOS and Android, and together they have like over 30 million installs and an active player base of about 8 million MAU. So how did we manage to grow our games that big? As you all know, games are a hit-driven business, so it's really hard to tell if a game will be successful if you don't test it on the market. So the faster you can test it on the market, the faster you know if it's successful, and if it's not successful, you didn't waste so much time and money to find that out. So what we try to do is to minimize the product-to-market time. And how do we do that? We do this. So basically, we have to say no to a lot of things. So we had in our mind a lot of ideas and a lot of cool features, but we really want to focus on the core gameplay mechanics first to get a cool game that's fun and basically release everything else later. So we said no to a lot of things. We said no to monetization because we think when a game isn't fun, the players won't monetize at all. So we didn't integrate in-app purchases or ad mediation into our games. We also thought like we didn't need like a very long, a lot of content because we first want to test if like the first few days are really fun. We also didn't localize it. It was only available in English. Localization is always an overhead, which slows us down, as well as back-end features like cloud save or other social features. So this would add like a lot of complexity, and we think for our first version we don't need those features. So what's the process behind this? So when we do a new game, we start with a very small team. It basically consists of a project manager, a game designer, an artist, and an engineer. So they think about like, hey, what kind of game do we want to make? What's the idea behind it? They think of the core gameplay mechanics, what do we integrate? And so basically, we are thinking about what we want to do. And then when the rough idea is clear, the people start to actually develop the game. So what we want to do is to have like a playable version as fast as possible, so we can test this version if it's fun and iterate over it. We also start internal testing very soon, so everyone in the company can check out different stages of the game and test it and give feedback, report bugs. But the most crucial thing for us is if the game is fun and if you would like to play it. So what you can see here is our second game, Idle Factory Tycoon, and how it evolved. So on the left side, you can see after it looked like after 1 week of development, so there were no graphics in there, there were only the core gameplay mechanics, and we could already play it and test it, and therefore we could already see if there are any flaws in the initial idea or how we can improve there. So of course, in the background, our artist is already working on graphics, So in the second stage, you can see like the rough graphic idea. Of course, there's nothing is polished yet, but we can already see how it would look like in the game, and we can iterate in the next stage there. Also, we add more gameplay features and make it a whole game. So in the third stage, the graphic team are starting to polish the graphics as well as building up the gameplay mechanics, finishing up, and also doing the balancing in the game so that it's like really fun. In the last stage, we mostly focus on UX. So we want to have like games which are very accessible, which are easy to play, and therefore that's very crucial for us. So we don't want games which have like a long tutorial and you need like long time to get into the whole game. And also we are adding animations and improve the overall look and feel about that. So we always set us a deadline for about 8 weeks. So what we would sometimes do is like schedule a release party even before we actually start developing the game. So we would have to have something after the 8 weeks, otherwise it would be very awkward if we don't have any playable game. So what we do next is releasing it as a soft launch, so on both stores. And what we want to find out there is like the very early retention metrics and also if there are organic downloads. So the reason why we are looking at that is that we really want to see if there are players actually looking for such a game and really if there's any demand on the market. Of course, we also look at player feedback and ratings. So that's important because we want to build a game for the players, not for us. And we can already see if there's some flaws in game design or any other bugs and stuff like that. So with our two games, we got like retention metrics of over 70% for day one. And we think day one is the most important metric for us to decide if we want to continue with our game. Because we think if a game, if a player will get back to the game on the next day, he already had fun in the first day. So it actually verifies if the player really likes the gameplay. So we think like 70% for us is the thing we want to go with. Of course, this depends on the genres. So for example, for a multiplayer hardcore game, it's very hard to reach a day one retention of 70%. So after that, if like retention metrics, organic downloads, and user feedback look good, we decide to scale the whole thing up. If they are not looking so good, we will kill the game. So what we do with scaling it up is that we would add more team members to it, build more features, actually the features we had to say no in the beginning, and also doing user acquisition. And for us, basically, when we support a game, we don't think it's done at any time, so we will support it like forever or how long. So then we're going to switch to weekly updates. So when we release it and want support in the future, we are doing weekly updates. So with our first game, Idle Miner Tycoon, released it in July 2016, and we already made like over 80 updates there. So we think it's very important to do like fast updates to actually get to know like the player feedback on new updates and really working on this feedback. And it also helps us on the development side. So if there are any bugs and stuff like that, we can identify them very early and pinpoint them down to a certain release. So we try to be very player-centric and try to connect to players. So the reason we are doing this is like we are building the game not for us, but for the players. So when we're doing weekly updates, players suggest, for example, an idea or a bug and those kind of things. They're really happy if they can get like the idea very fast in the game. So really listen to the players, try to get a lot of ideas and incorporate it back into the game. So we have like different sources for that. It's firstly the app stores where we get like ratings and reviews and other social media channels like Facebook, Instagram, and Discord, where more of our engaged players are, and also mails. So we also have like a button in our game where players can directly send us mails. So we really encourage the players to give us feedback so we can work on that. Oh, sorry. So then we do, so like our update policy is like we're doing one update in one sprint. So one development sprint is 1 week, and it includes like planning, developing, and testing. So game design already works a little bit ahead of this development sprint. So they're thinking about a new feature, what can we do there, preparing like design documents, thinking of any edge cases and stuff like that. And then basically the game art teams come in, they're preparing the assets, and then we basically start a development sprint. So we want like the developers to fully focus on developing and don't get blocked by any other team. That's why we're preparing so much in the before. And if there are anything, like for example, if they have to adjust like a graphics, then like the other team's highest priorities are to actually help those development teams so they can really be very fast and get not blocked. We also testing features during the sprint already, not just in the end, because if we can identify bugs very early, the developers can fix them, and it's not like if we find bugs at the end and developers would fix it, it would like basically delay the whole sprint. After that, we're doing a staged rollout. So we're releasing it to only a certain amount of players. So we start with 1 to 5% in the first 2 days. We look into our bug reporting tools if there are any exceptions or anything happening or crashing. And if everything looks good, we increase it to 20%. And there we mostly look into like player feedback. So for example, if we're releasing a new update and the players don't like it and the rating goes down, we would basically look at it again if we really want to release it or if we do some adjustments to it. On the fourth day, we basically then do the full release on Android and iOS. And yeah. So on iOS, there's no stage rollout. On Android, there's a cool feature integrated into the store. So that's why we do it on Android first. So now I want to tell a little bit like what was the roadmap of Idle Miner Tycoon, what features did we add after doing this minimum viable product. And so basically first, the players requested more content. As I said, there were only like some features, very basic, there were no long-term motivation. And of course the players loved it and they wanted more content. So we build it more mines, more continents, and therefore we will increase retention and, of course, user satisfaction. At some point, we also need to make some money to actually scale up our company and pay the bills, basically. So that's why we decided to integrate in-app purchases, and, of course, this increased our revenue. Players were then complaining that they want to have the game in their own language. That's why we did like localization after that, and so basically this increased also our downloads because we translated also the App Store pages and screenshots and update texts, so more players are looking at it and downloading it. Okay. After that, we decided to do live op events. A lot of other mobile games are doing that. So what we do here is like we have specific mines which are only available for a certain time amount, and they have like very cool settings. For example, you can see here candy mine settings. But we also do it like on special holidays, like Christmas or anything else. And this increased our revenue because players get really engaged and they want to get through the whole live op event, and also, of course, the retention because players are really waiting for the next mine to play it and get through it. Lately, we also introduced social features. So what we did there is it's like a cooperative multiplayer where you can invite your friends to work on an expedition and get certain rewards there. This increased our downloads because like players were asking their friends, hey, if you want to join me, we can do that. And of course, also retention. More is coming soon this year. As we said, we always developing our games furthermore. And yeah, lots coming. So I also want to get a little into the tech stack we are using. So with our first version of the game, we didn't have so many third-party tools integrated. Basically, we started with Fabric. It gives us a basic analytics tool called Answers and Crashlytics for bug reporting. So this was very important for us to get like the early day retentions and also know if there are any issues with our game on the technical side. We then added in-app purchases, and of course we needed like in-app purchase validation because otherwise like our analytics KPIs wouldn't make sense because there are a lot of cheaters trying to get the in-app purchases for free. So our game is also heavily based on advertising, so we have rewarded video ads integrated in our game, and it made sense for us to get like some mediation in there with Iron Swords. Push notifications are very important as well, so they're really good to increase like retention. Sending a push notification like 2 or 3 days after the last time you got in to actually get to know that you have the game installed, and we're using OneSignal for that, and that works out really well for us. And then players were also requesting that they want to play the game not only on their smartphone, but also on tablet, and therefore cloud safe is a crucial point. We're also using PlayFab for that. We can just store our safe game data on the storage from PlayFab and query it on the devices. So on the next stage, we want to scale up our whole game. So what we do there is doing marketing. We need an attribution framework for that where we use AppsFlyer for it. We also do live ops events via PlayFab, so we can schedule the event mines and through PlayFab. That's really cool. Social features, we're using GetSocial. They provide like deep linking, so you can send links to your friends, and then the whole friend graph is building up. And last but not least, we're using lately Azure to build up our own data platform. That's really important for us because we need more data to do marketing and get more in-depth analytics. So now Philip will take over and will present you a little bit on how we are doing the live ops.
Thank you, Oli. Hi guys, I'm Philip, like Oli just said, and I will talk about the live ops we use in Idle Miner Tycoon. I am the game backend developer of Idle Miner Tycoon and also some kind of IFT. And yeah, let's start with what exactly is live ops, because I want to talk about it. So what do you understand on the live ops, or what do most companies understand as live ops? It is mostly definable as adding new game content with the least amount of effort. So they think about just tweaking some numbers in the backend, just adding some stuff there, and there is new game content popping up for the players. Because this will, of course, lower the costs for new development and such, so this is always a good thing. But for us, live ops is even more. For us, the development of the game doesn't stop once we release it. Instead, like Oli just said, we are constantly putting effort into new features. And this is what live ops is for us. So it's not only some certain technology that we use, but it's also a mindset that we use to approach our game development. So what we do is, right now we are, for example, using PlayFab a lot, and we have live ops that could be defined as classic live ops, and these are, for example, player gifts, event mines, like Oli just told about, and our expeditions feature. And I will talk a bit about how we did this using PlayFab, and maybe also how you could easily integrate it in games of yours, because it's pretty simple to do. Well, some of them are simple to do. And still, they are very impactful, and I want to show you how and why it is that impactful for our games. So let's start with player gifts, which is a pretty simple and obvious thing. So we want to reward players for their loyalty. So we just want to give them in-game items from our side, so from the back end or something like that. So we say, okay, this player has been loyal for a year now. He is a really active player. And we want to reward this. And we give them some boosts he can use in the game or some instant cash and stuff like that. And this gives, of course, the player gets the feeling that he is something special. And this is exactly what we want to achieve, because this increases player retention. This makes them feel happy. And, you know, happy players are the best players. So the problem is, of course, we do have a lot of players. So right now we have around 30 million players registered in our app. And so to not have to really do this individually and manually for every player, we need something that is segmentation. And fortunately for us, PlayFab already has a feature like this on the next slide. Yeah. So we can just define, okay, these are our whales. These, for example, are players who have already been spending 1,000 bucks into our game. And yes, there are players like that. And so we can use different criteria to define these. And then we can say, okay, for all these players, we want to start a certain action on PlayFab, which, for example, means granting them a certain item ticket, which you see on the right side. So we just call a certain CloudScript function. I don't know who knows PlayFab. CloudScript functions is like the middleware we can write themselves. And CloudScript functions is what grants these items or these items to the PlayFab inventory of these players. And when they start up the game the next time, they will see the screen on the right, which says, OK, thank you for playing Idle Miner Tycoon. Here is a little something to show our appreciation. And this is exactly what the player love, because they see, OK, they thought about me. They care about me, you know. Of course, the options to do or to what we can do with this are much higher. So, for example, we can say, okay, this player has helped in finding a certain bug, which was very important for us. So we want to reward them individually, so we can grant him an item ticket from the back end. Or other than that, for example, you could imagine a churn prediction to use to increase player retention. So please come back. You will get a gift. Try it again. Maybe you will find more fun this time, stuff like that. So this is a very powerful tool, and it's amazingly simple to implement. So it's for us, it's just on game start, we check whether or not we have inventory item tickets in the inventory on PlayFab side. And if we do, then we show this image or this panel. And when the player clicks on this nice awesome button, he redeems the item tickets we just show up. And we remove them from the PlayFab inventory, and that's it. So it's pretty simple to implement, yet still very powerful. The next thing we talked about were event mines. Like Ollie already said, these are our time-limited game contents that we allow the player to participate in. So these are all themed in some way. So for example, right now, or is it still? I'm not sure. But there was recently there was the St. Patrick's Day event mine, of course, because it was St. Patrick's Day. And these mines are unique. So this is something that the player hasn't seen before, even if he played for a year or something. It's still new. It's refreshing content for the player. And even if the player hasn't played for some time, he might be happy about some new content coming up. So it also reactivates players that haven't been playing for a time. Also, which is pretty important, is we limit them for a certain period of time. So this can be a weekend, this can be a week. It differs from event mine to event mine. But this time limit, it motivates players to really push through. What we also do is we have objectives that the player can achieve in this period of time. And if he performs well, then he can even get badges that he can show to his friends, of course, in the game, not in real life. But he can have badges like a gold badge for participating or stuff like that, which is pretty amazing because they persist and he can collect these, or each player can collect these badges from different event mines. And this motivates players to try as hard as possible to get through these mines in the period of time that we give them. And this, of course, also motivates them to purchase some boosts or purchase stuff in general. We also have certain event mine offers which are only available in the event mines, and this time limit has a tremendous impact on our purchases, and I will show you later some diagrams. But what I really like about the event mines is what Ollie already said, is integrating the player feedback. So we have a lot of players saying, hey, we want to have a moon mine. Let's do a cheese mine, a candy mine, an underwater mine, whatever. And we have so many ideas coming from different sources, social networks, emails, and such. And like you might have guessed, we already had a candy mine. We had a moon mine, stuff like that, because we listen to the players and we incorporate these ideas into our real game. And this gives the player the feeling that he's really achieving something by writing to us. He's really part of the game. He's really creating this vivid world. And this is something that I really like about our approach. And as a player, I have to say that this is an incredible feeling. How do we create such an event mine? So it's pretty straightforward. We have to prepare, of course, the assets. The artists have to prepare the graphics, and the game balance. Game designers have to balance the mine in beforehand, depending on how long it will take. This has to be done in beforehand, of course. But then we can just announce it in social networks and also in the backend. We say, okay, there is something coming up. People will get a push notification, for example, and they will look at their phone and say, oh, cool, there's something coming up. I might come back to the game or prepare for this event. And then, of course, it finally starts someday and players can enter the mine and experience this time-limited content. And while they are doing this, our analytics is already running in the background and we can monitor these activities. We can look for errors occurring, we can look for crashes. Of course, we can also look into purchases, and we're listening to the social networks to see, oh, how does the player think that the mine is performing? Do they say it's too simple, it's too hard, they don't get it, whatever. We can always use this feedback to integrate it into our next event mine, which will then eventually be even better. So this is a feedback loop, which is amazingly important for us. And now I told a lot about how we do it and what to do. Now I want to show you some real graphics. So on the bottom left, see the amount of logins. As you might think, at 3 p.m. we started the event mine. And as you see, it just skyrockets, the logins. So they almost doubled because all players are joining the game or joining the event mine. And on the bottom right, even more impressive, you see our purchases. This is a huge spike because players are actually basically waiting for the event mine. They are saving money to spend for our event mines, which is just crazy. This is really cool. So we have a huge impact on our purchases during these events. And we could even do more of that, and we might consider this, but right now we just have a pretty basic concept, a simple implementation, but yet it works already tremendously. So this is just, in my opinion, it's just impressive. All right, let's get to the third and last part of my talk, which is our multiplayer feature, the expeditions. It's basically a live ops and an asynchronous multiplayer feature, although the concept is pretty simple. So the player has some expeditions he can choose from, and he can decide which one to start. And an expedition is basically just an amount of time, let's say 12 hours, and a certain amount of rewards he will get when these 12 hours are over. So that's pretty simple. So the time passed equals the progress within the expedition. So player, and this is pretty interesting, they use this, for example, to schedule themselves to come back to the game. So for example, they say, okay, this event or this expedition takes 12 hours. So I will take this one because in 12 hours I will be able to play again. And so they motivate themselves to come back into our game, which, of course, increases our retention. What makes this a multiplayer feature is the option we built in to invite friends to your running expeditions. And when you do this, then, first of all, these players that you just invited will get the same rewards that you did. So this is kind of sharing. But also, they will boost your expedition. So the amount of time that is necessary to finish your expedition will be reduced. So for example, a friend that joined first, he will pop up on the right side. As you see on the right side, he will pop up visually. And he will reduce the time by, for example, 2 hours or something like this. So you can even finish the expedition faster. And the faster you finish your expedition, the sooner you can start the next one, right? So you get even more rewards in a certain period of time. without doing anything for it, except for inviting your friends. So this is something that spreads impressively, because players are really happy about being able to cooperate with their friends in any way. And this is a pretty simple yet still effective way to do this. What options do we have for life ops by using these expeditions? First of all of these expeditions and all the data for these expeditions are on the backend side. So we can rebalance every expedition we want. We can even add new ones. So if we say, okay, this expedition is not taken at all, nobody uses it because the rewards are just too low, we can just rebalance it. Or the other way around, if we just say, okay, this is totally OP and everybody is doing this, then we can just reduce the rewards or we can just increase the time and stuff like that. And it will immediately affect all even existing expeditions. And this is pretty cool. Also, we can say, okay, we want to have expeditions which are also time limited. We can do this. It's all on the backend side, and this gives us a lot of life ops functionality. Or we could say, okay, we have some, let's say, whales, and we have some very rare expeditions. So for awarding them, we just grant these rare expedition tickets to them. So we allow them to access a legendary expedition just because they are that good players, you know? And this is pretty cool. There are a lot of options. And to be honest, we don't even use all of them yet, but there is a lot of opportunity there. So you might ask, how could I add something like this to my own game? And to be honest, the expeditions is something that is maybe the most complicated, but still I want to give you a small overview of how it works. So what I said about choosing an expedition is, on the right side you see what the player sees when he is able to choose an expedition from, let's say, three different expeditions. Even this amount of expeditions is editable by us, as you see on the left top. We can set how many expeditions he can choose from. So every player starts with three expeditions to choose from, and he just sees, okay, it takes, maybe here you have a legendary expedition with 2 days. He sees, okay, I can take that and I will get certain rewards. As you see, they are not all shown from the beginning, so there is some kind of anticipation, some kind of more motivation, because they expect something special, of course. And all these different scenarios, all these different configurations of expeditions are stored in a catalog in PlayFab. So each of these expeditions, we call them expedition tickets, is an item in PlayFab. So one of these items, for example, the rare expedition on the right side, looks like this in PlayFab. So they have an ID, they have a display name, which is not important, they have a class, and they are consumable. This means that you can consume this ticket, this item in PlayFab, from your inventory, and by that you start the expedition. So the expedition ticket is like a blueprint for a new expedition to start. And of course, this expedition ticket also has custom data, which defines what exactly we need as logic or in there. So for example, it defines a certain rarity. For example, 2 is rare, and maybe 4 is legendary, and stuff like that. We have certain roles which are important for drawing them randomly from the pool of available expeditions. And you see an array of time, which defines how much time it takes to finish this expedition with a certain amount of players participating. So you see, for example, it takes 43,000 seconds to finish this expedition with one player alone. And as you see, the more players are joining, the lower these numbers are, and with 5 players, you see that it already halved the time that is necessary. So you can do this in 6 hours if you have enough friends. And this, of course, motivates the players to invite their friends, and this motivates the players, the friends, to play the game more. So this this is a no-brainer. And then you see the rewards. So this is just a list of rewards. So you see 19 times the item with the ID 2207, which in this case is Supercash, for example. And I could tell you what the other ones are, but I won't. You just know it's the IDs are 1 and 203, but I want you to play the expedition as well, so I won't tell you. All right, what happens if a player now starts such an expedition? So what we do is, when a player starts such an expedition, we create a shared group data. PlayFab has a functionality that is called shared group data, which is basically just a space for arbitrary data, which is only accessible for a certain amount of members. So for now, when a player starts it by himself, he is the only member of this shared group data, and as he invites more friends, they will be added to the shared group data and get read and write access to this. So as you see, we have an idea on the top, we have the amount of members, or the list of all members, and we have all data we need to keep this expedition running. So for example, expedition start, push notification IDs and such. So all information you need can be stored in this shared group data. And the code side is pretty simple. So what you see now is CloudScript, once it's coming, come on, yeah. So starting an expedition is basically just creating a new expedition based on a certain expedition ticket that we have to determine first, and then consume this ticket. And creating the expedition is basically just creating a new shared group data and setting the values in the way that you just saw on this page here. So it's, of course, it's a bit more than that, but it looks, it's a quick overview. So you see, it's basically just creating this shared group data and filling it with valid values. So what happens to my friends if I just started an expedition? So my friends will now see this on the right side. So in addition to the expeditions they can start themselves, they will be able to join mine. So they just see, okay, there are 11 hours and 55 minutes left on my expedition, and there I'm the only one who already participated, and there are still 2 hours to join for them, and these are the rewards that they could get when they join. And so they can decide, okay, instead of starting my own, I participate in one of my friends, because together we're faster. And then they can just simply click on join. What happens then is we add them as members to the shared group data. We also tweak some numbers in the shared group data, for example, the list of participants, which is necessary for showing up avatars and names. And we set this expedition as the active expedition for this player who just joined. So basically, it's as simple as that. to be honest, it's not simple, but yeah. I will try to break it down. So we just create a participant based on the currently joining player. We add him to the list of all participants in the expedition, and then we update the shared group data. What we also need is we need to tweak some statistics, because we used statistics to find out which player is currently running an expedition or hosting. We say hosting an expedition. Stuff like that. And of course, we have to take care of some edge cases. For example, maybe during the time you last loaded this page, the expedition has already been filled up with participations, or the seconds remaining to join have been run down and stuff like that. But other than that, it's pretty straightforward. So this is how you join an expedition. And what happens then is what you just saw before. There are people running around in the same expedition waiting for the time to run out so they can all collect their rewards together. So that's basically my part. Let's give you a short conclusion and some takeaways for you to maybe think about for your own games. So first, what Ollie said, start with a minimum viable product. Take everything that is not absolutely necessary and just cut it out. Say no to as much things as possible, because first want to find out whether or not the game really works, whether or not it even is fun, before you invest into something that doesn't make sense. Then release the updates as often as possible. So when you have cut off everything, then just put it back in incrementally. So release often so you don't move into the wrong direction. It doesn't make sense to work for half a year on something that is just going straight into the wall. You want to have player feedback as soon as possible to integrate it, to incorporate it into your development process, to make sure that you're going into the right direction. It doesn't make sense to create something that is perfect for you, but not for anybody else.
Constantly add new game features to what you already have. Is the microphone? No problem. I can speak louder. Never stop adding new game features to your game.
Because players are always
expecting thanks.
We were almost
done, right?
Nice. Okay. Finally, never stop adding new game features to your game because the players are always anticipating stuff like that. Of course, you could say, okay, this cow is dead, we will do the next one. But most of the time, it's better to build on an existing game that is running and the players that are motivated to keep playing and they are expecting things from you. And use this. Use this to your advantage. And last but not least, I would always recommend, if you want to think about adding live ops like the one I just showed you, if you want to add them to your game, then it is best to use an existing tool instead of writing an own one, because this way you can experiment a lot easier. You can just try things out and then just throw them away without having invested a lot in own architectures and stuff like that. So try stuff out, for example, like PlayFab, like we do. Use existing tools. It makes stuff so much easier. All right. Now we have time to be answering any questions. And if the time is running out, we are both at the Azure booth tomorrow in the South Hall. It's the most beautiful thing in the South Hall, so you will find it easily. These are the dates. If you have questions, just come there, and we might be there. Also, you will find books like these laying around there, which help you getting a step into PlayFab. And yeah, thanks.